Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 317, recorded November 22nd, 2016. Today's a special episode. We are interviewing Colin from Melbourne, Australia. So, welcome, Colin.
Hi, Russ and Kelly, and thank you for inviting me on to speak to all your Aquariumaxes.
Yeah, we're very excited to have you on today. Colin and I have been conversing through YouTube for a while now, and I thought it would be a great idea to have him on the show. He has a lot to offer us. So, Colin, would you just give a brief introduction to your connection to the aquarium world, how you started, and kind of some of the things that you've done, I know, professionally and things like that relate to aquariums?
Yeah, sure. Funnily enough, I was born and raised in a small town in New Zealand on the west coast of the South Island, which is almost a national park, and lots and lots of water all around us. Funnily enough, I never really had an affinity for fish and aquariums in the beginning. My father built a pond, and we had some really healthy, lovely goldfish that we all used to be involved with and we enjoyed. But then we left Westport, we came to Australia, and life carries on, and fish keeping was not part of what I was doing until one Christmas when my mum bought the family a fish tank for all the children to enjoy. And that started the saga.
And do you remember what was in that fish tank back then?
Very well. Look, it was a 10-gallon aquarium bought from a trading market, and it had all the typical things you'd normally find in a pet store purchase. So a little plastic corner box filter with charcoal and wool, gravel stones, heater, and probably no light. And surely enough, over the first month or two of this thing being filled up for us to enjoy, the fish began dying.
Yep, the new tank syndrome that so many people suffer from, I guess.
Look, I think my introduction to it was pretty much what a lot of people do experience. And for me, I was the child of the family who was best at school. So I was sort of the one who was going to rescue everything and fix it. So I went about beginning to show how smart I was and how I could make this thing work. And then I started to discover I didn't know much about much. And that's how the journey began.
So rather than doing what so many people do and giving up when you realize the fish are dying, you decided to go the opposite direction.
Well, I think when you get a challenge and you don't really understand why what you're doing is not working, it does motivate a lot of people to actually work out what they're doing wrong and to find the fixes. And I would have been 17, 18 years of age, and you're pretty young and confident. You think that you can do anything, and I jumped into it.
And never looked back. Right.
I haven't so far.
Right. So I know that you've mentioned that once you got started, well, I don't know from this part of the journey until you started doing aquarium-related jobs, how did that happen, if I may ask?
Well, the first thing I did once I was serious in fixing the 10-gallon that wasn't working was I bought a 30-gallon, because the more water you have, the more stable everything is, and it's going to work a lot better. So I bought a bigger tank, and that bigger tank was then mine. And you start going to a local fish store, which is one that you are confident in, and I became a regular customer of this store every 1 week, 2 weeks, and I had to buy this, and I had to buy something else, and then I had to get something else. And then you landscape it, you hardscape it, you get new fish, and then you need a better filter, and then this happens. And progressively it evolves and it grows. So I was a customer of this particular store over perhaps a year and a half while I was beginning work, and I deferred university in order to earn some money and have a bit of fun time. And I began working in a retail store, which is in the same suburban area where this fish store was. And I just happened one day for the fish store owner to come into my retail store where I was working, and he gave me a job offer.
Oh, nice. Accepted.
I thought, what better thing than to actually work in your hobby and enjoy what you do every day? And I did that for 7 years.
Yeah, I remember dreaming of doing that when I was a teenager. I never ended up doing that as a teenager, but I thought about it a lot, wanted to try that out.
Look, what swung me over the line was this particular fellow whose name is Gary Higgs. He was a very motivated and ambitious young man, and he was importing tropical fish from Singapore. And in Australia, we have very strict quarantine laws. So as part of that, he had to build, at the back of his store, a purpose-built quarantine station. And as I got to know the shop as a customer, I was always very impressed with the quality of products that he was selling. And for some reason, a number of German people have immigrated to Australia to live. And there's a very strong German theme in the aquarium industry here. So we had brands like Eheim Filters, Serra Foods and Water Products, Shago Air Pumps and Heaters, right from the go. And that's what my aquariums were running on in the very beginning. So Gary impressed me from the start and the quality of the tanks in his store. And when you see tanks which are really beautiful display show tanks, you just are overwhelmed with how beautiful these things can be when they're done well. And so when he offered me a job, I jumped at the chance. And he was importing probably 10,000 tails of fish every 6 to 8 weeks.
Wow. So quite a volume of fish were going through that shop.
Yeah, look, I mean, the Melbourne as a city has got 4 million people, and it's a big city. And this particular store would have been in the top three stores in this city. And an enormous number of fish were coming through, we were selling. And lots of tanks, lots of pumps and filters, and it was really a very exciting time to be in the hobby.
Yeah, that sounds like it. This must have been an advantage for both the shop owner and the customers to have such a nice quarantine facility there too. Because by the time the fish are out for sale, they've already gone through all of that. When I know around here, if I go into a place where they're selling fish, a lot of the time they haven't really quarantined their fish much.
Look, when you work in an importing facility, you really experience the hardship the fish suffer when they travel. And of course, we would drive to our international airport, we would meet a delivery, the animals after they've landed would be probably 45 minutes to an hour to go to a quarantine inspection area where they're manually inspected by inspectors to make sure no illegal imports have been smuggled in with the allowable imports. And you really see these fish that have been in transit for perhaps 8 to 10 hours already. And they're in these bags, they're chock-a-block full in each bag. And the water is very often almost the look of milk with how much contamination has occurred as the fish have excreted into the bags in a state of shock. And then having picked them up and had the inspections done, you then put them into your own van. Our retail store was about an hour or so from the airport, and then you arrive at the store and you get into the quarantine station. You begin to get these distressed fish into clean water, and the whole process of acclimation is funny, because in a home aquarium you would do a very slow drip acclimation for fish going from a store to your own home tank. But in the quarantine import side, the fish are in such poor conditions that you have to immediately get them into the best water you can immediately. And in many ways it's like someone in a burning building with smoke everywhere, and the safest thing is to get them immediately into fresh air, as opposed to having a slow acclimation from a burning building to outside. So it's funny how we do some things in one situation, but then in a different situation you do it differently. And
part of
that is the confusion in this hobby, that why in some situations you do this, but in other situations you do it differently.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people are aware of the different chemistry that's actually going on when you have fish that have been in a bag for hours and hours, as opposed to fish that have been in a bag just a few minutes. The whole interplay of carbon dioxide and ammonia and ammonium and everything, it's just not something that a lot of, especially beginners, really understand.
Yes, and again, a beginner or even a normal home aquarist pretty much doesn't need to worry too much about what happens on fish farms or in import facilities, because it's a different arrangement, different business, and there's different problems that occur. So to some degree, if we concentrate on what's in front of us, that's always the first step.
Right. So, you worked with in this pet store, you said, and I guess it's a combination of an import facility and a pet store, and you said that was for 7 years?
Yes. So, up until 1992, mm-hmm. and then we had a very large recession that went around the world and hit Australia as well, and the business had a downturn, and we parted ways, and I carried on with my career in other businesses.
Mm-hmm. So have you ever returned to the aquarium business since then, or has it just been more of a hobby since then?
Well, the hobbies remained, and funnily enough, because the bug has bitten, my wife and I opened our own retail aquarium store some years later. So in 2000, we opened our own aquarium store.
Oh. And are you still running that store?
No, but we had a bad experience in 2000. We ran into another economic situation with the tech wreck. And it's funny how any new business starting up needs a whole range of things to work in your favour. And my wife and I hit a brick wall pretty early with our store. So after 9 months of trading, the cash flow wasn't where it had to be, so we closed that and we carried on other things. But as a business, many people who are already in the hobby business or have been, they really understand that it's very hard to make a living from the hobby.
Definitely. Yeah. I know that I make a little bit of money on the side from my aquarium and related hobbies, but I have to have a day job as well, just because, like you say, it's very difficult to have that be your sole source of income, certainly.
Well, I think many of us try. But certainly part-time probably is the smarter way to go. And look, today with online, anyone who is in a bricks and mortar business in the aquarium trade is continuously finding trouble with pricing and trying to match online prices when you've got bricks and mortar costs.
Exactly. Yep. In fact, our nearest aquarium store just went out of business just a couple of months ago for that reason. It's just having a hard time competing with both online operations as well as the big box store. So it just couldn't stay open. It was a sad thing.
It's a very sad thing, and in some ways it's a challenge which is there for everybody to take advantage of, because I've done on my YouTube channel a number of videos, and one of them in the last 6 months was that I bought a LED plant growing light, which I'd had my eyes on for about 2 years, but it's quite expensive. So you bide your time, and I ended up buying one from a retail aquarium store who had an online offer. And I thought, that's fine, I'll pay that price, and it was delivered. Now, that could have been any store from anywhere. It could have been the store that's just a block away with an online service. But it's just funny that the online store who sold it to me in Melbourne was a store in Queensland, which is over 1,500 kilometres away. So as a customer, I would never go to that store.
Right.
But online, they got a sale from me that they would never otherwise have gotten. And of course, any local store could have sold the same light to me as well, because I pay a deposit or I pay the whole price and they send it. So really any store can do that.
And it's probably a good idea for many of them to try to do that. It seems a good way to stay more competitive, at least.
Well, I think they should be doing that. And stores, of course, have the benefit of having all the livestock. So the perishable goods of live plants, live fish, fresh foods, live foods, are all things that local stores can offer. But they really should be supplementing their income with these high-value items that just, with a click of the mouse, as someone wants one and has paid for it, then they order it and have it dispatched straight to the customer. It's a terrific business model.
Yeah, it is a very good idea. And I think it's something that can help them compete with big box sort of pet stores, in that the big box stores typically only have some very basic stock items for beginner and intermediate hobbyists, and sure, things that advanced hobbyists can use, but not the specialty items like the high-end LED lights or things like that. So a local fish store that has an online presence can offer things like that when the big box stores won't.
Look, and I think no store can really have on their shelf at any one time all the different sizes. Because when you look at lights, you've got all the different lengths of lights. Now look at tanks, all the different sizes of tanks. Look at filters, all the different sizes of filters. So there's a whole range of hardware that really, if you try and keep it on the shelf all the time, you have all this money invested and just sitting there waiting. Whereas if really you have very, very little in the store in the way of those expensive hardware items, but offer it online. And again, people should be able to walk into the store, hop onto their interactive screen, do some push-button taps, what do you want, place your order. They know they're not going to walk out of the store with it today, but having ordered it and paid for it, and it's there in 3 days.
Right. Right, that really is a good way to go. And it also...
Well, there'll be an evolution in this as time goes by.
Undoubtedly. Yeah, when people realize, too, that they can get... they can get reduced or eliminate even the shipping costs by ordering it in their local store. That often can make a difference too.
Look, it's an expensive hobby, and I take my hat off to people with multiple tanks. Number one, you've got the time investment with multiple tanks, but just the price of it as well. So anyone who's got the bug badly deserve respect.
Definitely, yeah, it's not cheap.
Well, it can be cheaper, and obviously a lot of people who have a lot of different tanks utilize the eBay, Craigslist, all the ways that people do peer-to-peer selling.
No, that's definitely true. I think of all the aquariums I have set up now, I think only one of them was bought new. I think all the rest of them I purchased on local classifieds or something of that sort. So definitely, there are ways you can make it a bit cheaper for sure.
And I think the need always with all of us, our lifestyles, there's so much going on with a home, with a family, with events, that money only goes so far, and so does time. So the hobby being more and more affordable, I think, is the key to being successful as you go forward.
Right. I think that's true. So something I wanted to ask you about, we talked a little bit before about this through YouTube and so on, is when beginners get into the hobby, there are a lot of obstacles, as you alluded to before, when you started out. And any of us who've been in the hobby long enough has encountered a lot of those obstacles. But one of the obstacles is just understanding that first little critical period. Can we talk a little bit about that? What they need to understand in terms of words used and in terms of things they need to be careful about with their first tank and that sort of thing?
Yeah, sure. I think as we have this hobby for longer and longer and we get older, whether we get more cranky, I don't know, but we certainly get harder and firmer opinions. And I think one of the opinions I've really developed over the years is that we sometimes in this hobby are far too shy to tell newer people that all your fish have a very high risk of dying in the beginning. So with the language use of the nitrogen cycle, and I've enjoyed YouTube very much over the last couple of years, watching a lot of people talking and explaining and showing lots of useful aquarium information. And as they're teaching, and I'm watching these videos, there's a regular use of language around the nitrogen cycle. It's very important, and these are things that are very important to you being successful in the hobby. But with clear use of language, I think sometimes a new person doesn't really understand unless it's made really, really clear. And in the way of the nitrogen cycle, where if you're starting off with pure, clean, sterilized water, a tank may take 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks to fully cycle, depending on temperature and the bio load and how you scale and build the bio load over time. Very few new people realize that my fish are going to die. And it's a matter of how specialty stores, big box pet stores, how the hobby in general presents this first month, that no, you can't just go out and buy 25 fish. And I think there's a challenge there that I've always thought a brand new glass tank should have a sticker, a little peel-off label, and that label should be a generic one which is adopted by the hobby. And pretty much every brand which deals in tanks would adopt this labeling. And the labeling is a warning, and the warning says that all your fish will be at risk for the first 6 weeks until the nitrogen cycle has completed. Whatever what the words are that summarize it in a short sentence. But definitely your fish are at risk. And most people, when they get into the hobby and they have clean water, 25 fish, and then half of them die, I think half the people leave the hobby after that. And I think that we're
right.
All losers for that.
Because it is a very traumatic thing to watch, half of your fish pass away within a very short time. And I've seen it happen many times, even with the attempt to help people and explain exactly what's going on and what they need to do. I agree, it would be very helpful to include that sort of information in an aquarium. And I think in many cases, people would be willing to say, oh, well, then I need to take steps. What are the steps I need to take? And it would just lead them in the right direction. And I have encountered some people who, despite my best attempts, just don't want to believe it too. So, but I think it's in, you know, we can do as much as we can, and by doing so, be able to avert many disasters and solve many problems before they started.
Look, if more people stay in the hobby, there's more customers. And more
exactly.
people in the hobby creates a bigger market, and a bigger market creates lower pricing. So I think keeping fish is something that probably two-thirds of the world's population have done at some time. And typically, of course, it's a goldfish for most people to start with. But most households have had a bit of fish experience.
Yeah, that's true. And in many cases, like you say, it might be a goldfish in a bowl that lasted a week or two. But there are a lot of people who have tried it. And unfortunately, a lot of them haven't.
Fish keeping up there with stamp collecting.
Yeah. Something that almost everyone tries, but few people.
I think trying is the word.
Yeah, I think that's true. But I like that. I wish we could get that into those who wholesale tanks, put some sort of label on there that would.
Because a lot of tank manufacturers are separate to other products. So I think if we looked at the brands in the industry, we would think of names like Fluval, Seachem, different brands, different names you would think of. And all those brands don't do tanks. So I think it's probably a matter of some of those leading brands actually adopting some tank manufacturers and supplying some of these type labels.
Yeah, that's true. That would be a good way to do it, I think, because it's definitely in their best interest, like you say, to be able to grow the market. They need to be able to have more people having success with it.
And I think that's the thing, growing the market, yeah.
Yeah, I like that. And I think the awareness is slowly growing to some extent, as you know, more people are posting about it on YouTube, and you'll get some pet stores that will talk about cycles nowadays and how to cycle your tank.
And, the thing about today is that the internet has provided the opportunity for information to fly around the planet, and there's conversation today between you and I, Australia to the US. Is an example that information is really, really starting to accelerate around the world. And with video, and where YouTube comes in so handy, is you can see it in front of you, and it's explained in front of you. And then you can pause it, and you can replay it, and you can share it with somebody else. So I think that today we've got a medium that we can really take advantage of and use for our benefit.
Yeah, and it's amazing how In the last, I would say, in the 10 years, how much of a change has occurred in that, where it used to be fairly difficult to get video up online. There were those people who did it, but it was so much more complicated to do, because that's when I started putting video on computer about 10 years ago. And just nowadays, you can do it literally at the push of a button. Your phone can be live feed up on putting a live feed up on YouTube, and it's so much easier. So that is a great thing, and it's nice to see that there are those who in the aquarium hobby who are taking advantage of it.
It's a whole new frontier. I mean, look, when I was back in my early days, it was all books, and the books that stood out for me were the Nature Aquarium books from Takashi Amano. They were absolutely mind-blowing and so detailed, so informative, but just they were so inspirational. And also we had another German group with the Optimum Aquarium. And these two gentlemen started their own company with that particular concept and the Dupla products. And between those two books, there was a base of information that was just comprehensive, and that really started me off in my my hobby.
Yeah, and nowadays we have so many different directions that not only do we have the books, like you're saying, and quality information online, there's also the other side of the coin. There's information that people put out there that doesn't necessarily have basis in experience or research, but people feel like they're on the internet, so they can say what they want.
That's certainly true, and you can be a personality for being a personality.
Yeah, exactly. And luckily, in many cases, it is visible. But I think, you know, that more so to advanced hobbyists can look at someone and say, oh, well, this person doesn't really have the experience they're pretending to have. And for a beginner, it might be harder to distinguish.
Yeah, I think beginners, full stop, just need a lot of help.
Yeah, very true.
Which is why I enjoyed your series, Russ, on the your first aquarium. I was very impressed with that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That was actually inspired directly by a neighborhood friend of ours who purchased a 2-gallon aquarium for her daughter and stocked it with goldfish. And then somehow it came up when my wife was visiting with her that that had happened, and they had had this aquarium and it was having some problems. And Kelly said, oh, well, you know what? I can help you with that, and Russ can help you with that. And so we came over that evening, and we were able to assist them, and we helped them get a bigger tank, and we taught them all about cycling and everything. And it occurred to me that I could put the information that I'm giving to her, because instead of trying to cram it all into her head at once, which probably wasn't going to work, having a step-by-step series that was very basic might be of assistance not only to her but to others. And so that's where it came from.
And I think without a doubt steps are the way to go, because there's so much to take in all at once.
Right. And if they have, they know that it's there, and I arranged it as a series, as a playlist on YouTube, in the hopes that people would come and maybe stumble upon one part of it and say, oh, this is good, but look, there are more, and go back and watch the whole thing, and then as needed, go back and refer to particular episodes as they encounter questions or things like that.
Yeah, very much so. That's the beauty of YouTube.
Yep, it's right there at everyone's fingertips.
Look, I think it's actually today's encyclopedia.
That's true. That's very true. And I think for how-to information specifically, that YouTube is an excellent venue for that. One picture is worth 1,000 words, so a video is worth several million, and accompanied with good, clear verbal explanations, it's even better.
Agree entirely.
So I think, I wonder if we could, I'm not sure how we can get that working, but I wonder if it might be worth contacting some of the companies and just seeing what they would think. Some of the companies you mentioned that
look,
produce.
I think there are people in the hobby who have sufficient status that if they were to approach these reputable brand companies in everyone's best interest, they'd be very interested. It makes commercial sense.
It's true. That's, I think we should probably...
We should start a campaign.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's something we can be thinking about how best to begin that, and then I think it would be great. It would eliminate so much heartache of those who have bad experiences with uncycled tanks, and then, of course, it's eliminating a lot of suffering that the fish would otherwise have to go through.
Look, I think there are so many benefits all around in every way that everyone wins when it works.
Right. Very true. And one thing I noticed that a lot of, and I'm not pointing fingers at any particular store or chain of stores or anything, but as you mentioned, I think some stores are just desperate to make sales because they need to keep going. They need cash flow. And if someone's going to walk in there and buy an aquarium, they're not. Not all of the stores or not all of the personnel in the stores feel like they can tell people, you know, this tank needs to be cycled before you go any further. But ultimately, it would be in the best interest of the store and everyone there.
Yes, look, it's very hard to turn away $500 or more if it's available to you that day.
Right.
And,
right.
I think is at the heart of half the trouble that we have in the hobby.
Yeah, but it is difficult to look at that potential sale and say, well, I'm going to have to turn you away from it. So,
well, one step at a time.
Yeah, exactly. One step at a time. And if we can just get some of those companies to put those labels on, and then people in the store don't have to say it, but it's still there. The information's there. And maybe that will kind of help get the cycle going. So
and I think, too, that you've got to put a link to a website on those labels, and those labels could then lead you online to a whole raft of information.
Yeah, that's a good idea. If there's a link right there, they can just pop right into their smartphone, or maybe even one of the QR codes that they can just scan and it'll send them straight to a video or something like that.
Oh, I'm sure that's where we're heading.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great idea, and I'd like to ask you, I think that in and of itself is a great piece of advice that beginners need to know, that your tank is poisonous until it's cycled, and it's going to take some time. It's going to take weeks to do it. And if there were, though, another piece of advice that you could give to beginners, maybe even before they start the hobby, before they get a tank or anything like that, what would you tell them?
That's an excellent question, Russ. I would say it's know the purpose of your tank.
Hmm.
And why I say that is because if it's a show tank, then everything that you do and you buy is drawn towards a certain destination, and that is that it's going to look very nice in your lounge room all the time and be a feature. Whereas if you have an aquarium where the purpose is breeding fish, you really go in a totally different direction, and the equipment is different, the cost is different, and the manner in which you go about things is different. So I think the purpose of your aquarium is almost first and foremost what you must be clear in your mind before you then spend a dollar.
That is a very, very good point. And I think so few beginners ever think of that, but they really should. That's an excellent point.
Well, I think the confusion that I can easily appreciate is when I watch my YouTube aquarium videos, which I see quite a few these days, people are talking about a kind of tank. They're describing it, what they're doing, how they're doing it, which all sounds fantastic and it's good because it's a certain particular kind of tank for a certain purpose. And because I understand the different purposes, I understand what they're saying. But if I was a general new person in the hobby, and most general people come into the hobby for, I think, a show tank. So they have some gravel, some plants, some rocks, some fish, a light, a filter, and it's going to be a little community tank. So my gut feeling is that that's what most people start off wanting, and then from there it branches.
Right. And keeping in mind exactly the expectations of that tank and so on just makes a great difference.
Well, I think when you see bare bottom tanks and tanks with a gravel substrate, you're really heading in two very different directions for two very different reasons. And it's very important from my fish keeping side that you have a structure about what you do and how you do it for the purpose, because your show tank with gravel, rocks and plants and decorations is going to require a different routine than what the person with a rack of breeding tanks in their garage who's breeding cichlids to what they're doing.
Exactly. And I've noticed that, for example, I have a goldfish tank out in the living room that visitors will come and see, and I maintain that one differently. I landscape it differently with the thought in mind that people are going to come in and look at it than I might with another tank in the back room where I'm just breeding something, and I want to provide a good breeding environment, but not necessarily such an aesthetic.
Mm.
Right.
And in many ways, I look at these aquariums as being rivers and lakes. And to me, I think, back to the language and the hobby, if we could sort of get people thinking along the lines of rivers and lakes, it helps people to get a concept. And in a river, the water's flowing. There's always new water all the time. Every single second is a water change. And all waste materials are always flushed away. That's a river.
Right.
But in a lake, of course, the water may have rivers feeding into the lake, but the lake predominantly is a settled body of water where mud accumulates. And they're different.
Right, yeah, that's a good comparison. It helps hopefully visualize the differences in what's happening.
And what needs to happen. It's one of those areas that once you start watching a few videos and being in a few fish forums online, the whole how much water should I change how often, it really confuses a lot of people.
No, definitely. You have as many opinions on that almost as you do have, aquarists there. Just people who say, oh, this is what I do, this is what everyone should do, and this is... and then someone else says something completely different. Other people say, well, water changes aren't that important as long as you do this. And yeah, it's certainly true. It can be very confusing.
It opens up a whole Pandora's box.
It does.
But I think the idea of having river or lake then straight away lends itself to water changing routines as far as, well, for the purpose of what this tank is, it's going to be flushed all the time. And then for the purpose of a different tank, it won't be flushed all the time.
Right. Right. That if you have, for example, like a Wallstedt method tank where water changes are somewhat minimal because there's so much plant mass that's taking up nutrients, then that's a different system altogether from what you might do in another tank where you have herbivorous fish, so you can't really keep plants. And
that's
different
exactly
things like
right. In many ways, I'm a planted tank enthusiast, so it really is a different way of keeping fish when plants are equally as important as the fish.
Right. Yeah, and it's an interesting thing, too, how that will change from tank to tank, and it'll change over time in a particular person's hobby where... You know, I used to have several high-tech planted tanks, And that was what I was doing, and I still love those tanks, and I'm sure I'll do more in the future. But right now, all of my tanks with plants in them are fairly low-tech, just because of the needs I have right now with regard to time and so on, and the fact that I want to try out certain fish, like Lake Tanganyikan fish, and that limits the types of plants you can keep just because of the water chemistry. And so things like that, you know, there's an evolution there, too, as people want to try out new things.
And I think that's the joy about the hobby. The hobby's got so many different facets to explore, and as long as we understand that they are different parts of the same whole, and that if you think about Africa, for example, with African rift lakes, but then there's African tropical rivers, and they're all in the same country, but yet the different biotopes, and they're just different aquariums, and they're just different things we're focusing on. And coming back to the purpose of your tank, is it a breeding tank? Is it a hospital tank? Is it a quarantine tank? Is it a show tank? Is it a planet tank? The purpose really, in the end, will always then fine-tune the things you're doing.
Right. That's a very good point. And as that tank itself may evolve over time, too, what you do to it and how you tweak it will also change.
Yes, look, a traditional show tank with a substrate in many ways has a lifespan, and it's got a young stage, an adolescent stage of maturity, and then a stage of old age. And as that substrate goes through having very, very little nutrient load, having the perfect nutrient load, and then eventually having too much. People often don't think that their tank has got a life span, and that at some point, eventually, it needs to be refreshed, and then you start the cycle again, which is true of a substrate planted tank. Whereas, of course, a bare bottom tank is ageless.
Right, and I think that's important to recognize. It can be... I mean, there are things you can do with maintenance that may change how long that cycle lasts, but at the same time, at a certain point, things are going to happen and sediment's going to settle. And, yeah, like you say, there's going to be a point at which the nutrients are high enough that you're going to need to make some changes to rejuvenate the tank.
Absolutely. And I think the evolution of life is something that if you start the hobby and you stay in the hobby for a while, you become somewhat more of an environmentalist, and you really do appreciate the life forces that are at work. And then you look around you in your own environment and you appreciate the rivers and the creeks, the lakes, where you live, and you see the same forces at work and the same processes. And you get a really good appreciation for nature.
I think that's very true. And I think that is valuable in and of itself, just in this world where technology, which is a beautiful thing, but it can also be a thing that takes us away from nature and tends to maybe reduce our opportunities to connect with it. That's one way to reconnect with nature.
And to be honest, the reason I have an aquarium in my home is for relaxation. I just like to sit and look at it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. My wife will be the first one to say, if I myself personally cannot see an aquarium, it doesn't take very long before I start getting just a little jumpy. Yeah, definitely something that helps lend a sense of calm and relaxation. I agree completely.
In a very, very busy world, a bit of calm is a wonderful thing.
Definitely. Well, Colin, it looks like we are just about reaching the time when I should give you a chance to let our listeners know how that they can find out more about your tanks and everything through various outlets, YouTube and any other social media that you would like to share.
Thanks, Russ. Look, I've got a YouTube channel, which I'm just playing with and learning how to use and having a lot of enjoyment with. And it's just my name, which is Colin Barsby. I was very smart. I put it all continuous, so there's no space, all in lowercase. And that channel is just one where I will just share different thoughts and different images, and in some ways it's nice to see almost aquatic poetry with some nice vision and some nice music.
Right, and I've been enjoying your channel since I found it. I think you left some comments on my channel, and then I went and checked out your channel and was very pleased by what I found, so I'm sure our listeners will be too.
Thank you, Russ. Look, I'm very pleased to share what I've got, which is quite modest. I haven't got a garage full of aquariums, and I probably never will have. It's just so much time to invest in that, and I really respect those who do, because it's a big undertaking. But for me, having a tank is important, and where I can share some thoughts and some knowledge, I'm always happy to do so.
Yeah, and I think there is a lot to be said for, you know, what in terms of quality and focus that you can get if you just have one or a few tanks. I mean, nothing wrong with having lots when you can, but those of us who have fewer tanks, there's a lot to be said for what you can get by what you can dedicate to that one tank or those few tanks can add a lot to its beauty and the enjoyment you get from it as well.
There's only so much time every day, and I think that the more tanks you have, you will learn that the more time they all take. And eventually
the work
aspect can take away some pleasure sometimes.
Yeah, it's always a careful line to walk. You don't want to go too far when things get too difficult, but there are people that do that as well. You hear about a lot of people who decide, oh, I'm downsizing now, and it can be a difficult decision to make, but you have to find that balance where you have enough time to take care of the tanks and enjoy them. Once you cross the line of only taking care of them and not really enjoying them anymore, then what's the point?
That's a balance we have to find out for ourselves, isn't it?
Right. Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you, Russ. I hope we can talk some more later on some other topics.
Me too. Yeah, I really enjoyed talking to you, and I will look forward to doing it again. There's so much more to cover.
Thank you so much for inviting
me. And thank you, Colin, and we'll make sure to have you back.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.